5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
You're listening to Working Forward, presented by Symetra. In this limited podcast series, hosted by Todd Zenn, we explore the future of work from a variety of viewpoints and discuss the challenges and opportunities ahead.
Hello, and welcome to the Working Forward podcast. I'm Todd Zenn, your host. Thank you for joining us for a special bonus episode of Working Forward. Our topic today is an important one to all employers, especially those that choose to self-insure the medical insurance they offer to their employees. We'll be focusing on medical cost trends, stop-loss insurance, and we'll be recapping what was an absolutely wild January 2026 renewal cycle in the stop-loss market. My personal focus at Symetra is workforce benefits, offerings such as group life, disability, supplemental health insurance. And to host this conversation, I wanted to bring in a colleague who has the expertise to drive this very important conversation in the absolute best possible way. Symetra is one of the pioneers of stop-loss insurance. We've been selling it for a half century. So I can't think of a better person to come in and lead our dialogue today than Jeremy Freestone. Jeremy is a senior vice president here at Symetra, and he heads up our stop-loss business. So as usual, we've got some fantastic guests. He's going to introduce them. And I'll also stick around to chime in on how the significant medical cost trends impact the workforce benefits products we sell as well. But without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Jeremy to moderate the conversation.
Awesome. Thank you, Todd. I think we've done this Working Forward podcast for over a year now, but this is the first actual stop-loss specific one that we've done. So pretty excited about that. And we're joined today by a couple of my colleagues here at Symetra, but also some self-funded stop-loss superstars. So among those is we have Mabe Kocha joining us. How are you doing today, Mabe?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. It's a good year for Bears fans, I saw.
It's a great year. Playoffs start this week. Very excited.
And somebody probably needs little or no introduction. We have Ron Peck joining from the FIA Group. How you doing, sir?
Hi, Jeremy. I'm doing great.
Awesome. Great. Great to have you. We also have Tom Costello, who heads up distribution at Symetra. How's it going, Tom?
Very well, thank you.
And last but not least, we have Carlos Martinez-Ellis, who underwriting at Symetra. How are things in the Be Nice state of Minnesota, Carlos?
They're awesome. Thank you. I'm super excited to be here.
Great. Well, it's great to have you all. Thank you so much for joining. We're sitting here. It's January 6th. The January 2026 campaign is sort of wrapped up for stop loss, but for self-funded employers and groups, what a cycle this has been. You know, Just to set some context here, we have some information from the NAIC around 2024, which gives us kind of like the most recent snapshot of what's been going in the stop loss market. And we can tell from that in 2024, the overall premium size of the market crept up to almost $40 billion. And that was about almost a 13% increase year over year from 2023, which was on the high end of how much that market grows per year. So premium went up a lot in 2024, more than usual. But even though the premiums went up that much, the loss ratio reached an all-time high. So the premium was not enough to keep up with what was going on in the claims world, and loss ratios crept up to just almost 86%. And so going into 2025, we were coming off of a year where loss ratios had gone up, even though premiums had gone up as well. There are some indications that carriers were needing to correct some of what was going on in their books in 2025. And then in the summer of 2025, some information started coming out. You know, like PwC, I have a couple in front of me. PwC in July released a report. They said medical cost trend is once again hovering at rates reminiscent of 15 years ago. The U.S. healthcare system is heading into another year of powerful inflationary forces exerting pressure with few deflationary forces in sight. And then shortly after that, in August, the International Foundation of Employee Benefit Plans released U.S. employers project a median health care cost increase of 10% for 2026, attributed to a variety of factors impacting organizations' medical plan costs, with catastrophic claims and specialty costly prescription drugs topping the list. And then the reports just started cascading after that. Mercer came out in September 4, and they said employers are bracing for the highest health benefit cost increase in 15 years. Aon came out just a few days later. We are seeing medical cost inflation levels at their highest in years. Gallagher came out with something right after that. And it just all started to sort of cascade at that point, right around in the summer. And that was on top of what was seeing. So it's a crazy time. And I just want to like go around with all of you. And we'll start with you, Tom. How would you describe this January 2026 cycle in one sentence?
Okay, it was challenging for all the parties involved in the stop-loss market, and that being the stop-loss carriers, the brokers and advisors that consulted employers, and then finally the employers that purchased stop-loss. So definitely a challenging cycle for all parties involved, not only from costs, carriers looking for increases, employers not being ready for these increases, advisors trying to find homes for these accounts that maybe are getting rate increases. So if again, to sum it up, I'd say it was challenging for everybody involved in the market.
Yeah, Carlos, what anything you would add to that, or how did you see it from more of an underwriting perspective?
Well, to me, I like to describe it as a real life depiction of the video game Punch-Out. I don't know if you guys have played Nintendo games before, but it kind of felt like, there you go, Ron. Kind of felt that way. You know, you're in this rank, you are trying to dodge a fight, you're dodging some punches, you're getting some in yourself, trying to gain some ground, and at the end, you're hoping to win the round. That's kind of how it felt like to me.
And Ron, you're not specifically working with stop loss directly necessarily, but you definitely have a vantage into what employers are dealing with their plan designs and what they're struggling with. What were you seeing, or how would you describe it?
Yeah, so you're right. I'm coming from an interesting perspective, because at the FIA Group, we service employer and employee benefit plans, especially self-funded plans, stop loss carriers. But it's the old adage, right? I'm not just, someone who services the plans. I'm also a client, right? And I'm not talking about the hair club, obviously. But, you know, because in addition to working with these plans, I'm an employer, right? I've got my own employees. We have a self-funded plan. And, you know, I kudos to where they're due. I've been a policyholder of Symetra. My plan has been with Symetra for decades at this point. And so I'm coming from the perspective of an employer who has to think ahead and try to contain the costs, but also someone who's witnessing what other employers are dealing with as well. And, you know, you mentioned terms like inflation and deflation. And as a Patriots fan, you know, the term deflate or deflation, still I get a little antsy when you mention it. But in this case, that would be nice. But those are terms that seem almost very, you know, sort of like impersonal or sterile. And when you look more deeply into it, it's being driven by things that are rather commonsensical. If you have the perspective, if you see the trends, you see what's happening, you break it down to its brass tacks. And honestly, the term I would use is predictable. You know, we saw over the span of the last year, 2 years, what's happening from a healthcare and consumption perspective and pricing perspective. It's to be expected, the type of increases and changes that we're seeing now. It's cause and effect.
Yeah, and when you say personal or impersonal as terms, I was at a grocery store yesterday, standing in line at our pharmacy for a family member. And when I got to the counter, the pharmacist was just telling me she was shocked at how much deductibles had gone up and how much more people were paying. She just noticed it in the last 5 days to start the year as health plan changed, that people were having to fork over a lot more all of a sudden. And it was noticeable for her behind the counter. I mean, that just like brought it home for me. I mean, we're obviously, you know, in our gig working on the stop loss side, but it's like impacting everything. Todd, you're more on the workforce side, but I'm curious, you know, January 2026. How did that impact your universe?
Well, you know, cost pressure to employers is going to impact everything, you know, even if it's just broadly speaking, all of this stuff comes from the same pot, right? So, you know, if there's cost pressure and expense pressure around stop loss or medical, that's going to trickle into disability plans and possible plan changes or, you know, amounts that they're covering. I think the other thing, though, on maybe on the plus side for the workforce benefit side, and Jeremy speaks to kind of what you just referenced, it's driving an increased need for supplemental health insurance products. The cost sharing is going up for consumers. They're looking for ways to deal with that and mitigate those impacts. So we're seeing increased interest from employers in offering broader supplemental health plans to help their employees with that impact. So it's interesting times, I think, on the workforce side. There's positive and negative impacts, I would say.
Yeah, and Mabe, how about from your vantage point, BCS, how would you describe what this campaign was like for you?
Yeah, I think if I could summarize it in one word or two words, I'd call it a bloodbath. What we saw was a lot of change in BORs because employers weren't happy with the results that their broker was driving. And as we know in this business, it's not the brokers that are driving the result, it's the carriers that are having to price for what's happening in the market. And as everybody has already mentioned, we kind of saw this coming, right? We've known that medical inflation has been increasing. You mentioned like the PwC study and the Mercer and Aon studies. It almost felt like those companies were trying to get the word out there as soon as they could, to really prepare employers for what was going to come. And those that did a good job of that, they braced the employers for this big, massive change. I think they've kind of, you know, dealt with the waves here. But a lot of that has meant increased cost sharing. It's probably meant changes in carriers, changes in networks. It's probably meant addition to supplemental benefits, like what Todd mentioned. We had one really large addition to our supplemental health portfolio this year, and we actually saw double the expected enrollment on that plan. Wow. And it's really because the deductibles are so high that members just need to find other ways to subsidize their expenses.
Wow. Well, and maybe staying with you, Mabe, as you think about what's the drivers causing all this? You know, is there anything that you kind of put your finger on the pulse as to, well, what's causing some of this madness? What's a factor out there that's contributing to kind of this unprecedented set of circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you just focus in our realm, which is stop loss, right? So let's say the average stop loss deductible is $100,000. At that level, you've kind of lopped off the first 85 to 90% of claims. And in our world, I think high dollar claims are only getting higher. Hospital charges have gone up. The inflation on hospital charges have gone up. And specialty drugs has been and continues to be probably like the largest trajectory within like the high dollar world. But we have to keep in mind that employers are not just paying a stop loss premium. They're also funding their full self-funded liability. And in that space, GLP-1s, the weight loss drugs, that is a trend that is not slowing down. There's new weight loss drugs that are coming out, and those cost, you know, roughly $8,000 to $12,000 per member per year. And while that's not a stop loss claim, that's a really high claim that will drive like a aggregate claim for an employer. And so I think their world is just getting rocked overall with medical inflation. And yeah, if you study what's happening with health insurers, they're getting hit across basically all their business, whether it's fully insured ACA or it's Medicare Advantage or Medicaid. It's just the overall medical inflation is impacting essentially every line of business.
Yeah. Carlos, anything you know, you're looking at it from an underwriting, you're having to try to put a price on what this risk is looking like. Anything that you're kind of feeling is driving what's going on here, in addition to what Mavis said?
Well, I think, you know, there's certainly a lot of factors, you know, outside of the medical trend increases, the economic implications that we're talking about. But I think there are, you know, one key dynamic that I think is affecting where we are right now in the industry is the persistent ask that we've had as carriers in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years to do more for less. You know, there has been a lot of a push to do that, and whether it's rate caps or no new lasers or all the bells and whistles there are in the stop loss contract, that makes it harder to try to get the lift that you need time over time to get you to a place that you're comfortable with. So that tends to get more, a little bit worse in a hardening market or a hard market, because that you kind of get to the end and then you have to make up for the challenges and the loss ratio pressure. So with all these bells and whistles, that dynamic just makes it really hard.
Yeah, and I remember that being a topic, you know, at Saya, for example, like how can premiums keep up with claims when you have some of these caps on top of you that sort of prevent you from getting to those levels that you need? How about you, Tom? Anything that you would add to that as far as drivers for the year?
Well, I think that the carriers were, stop loss carriers in particular, were benefiting from the reduction in large claims during COVID and had begun to price for that business using those claim levels from 2021, 2022, bleeding into 2023. And then when this all jumped back up and costs went right back to where they were before COVID, I think everybody had still been pricing it, assuming those 2 years or 2.5 years were going to continue. And that certainly did not happen. So you had a bounce back or rubber band effect of claims spiking back up to levels that we hadn't seen in almost 3 years. And I'm not sure much of the market or any of the market was prepared for that.
Well, Mabe, I don't know if Tom thinks very much of us actuaries who are in charge of setting rates. We you know,
here's the problem.
Those COVID years and just kind of rolling the dice.
Here's the problem. A lot of us got it right and priced to what it needed to be. But we got a lot of sales pressure, right? And we were told we need to reduce rates because XYZ competitor is out there selling it for lower. So when you got Tom Costello like beating at your door to lower the rates, what can you do?
I know. It's rough going. What about from a regulatory perspective, Ron? Anything this year from a regulation perspective or anything like that that you think might have been contributing as well?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, when you step back and you ask these questions about out-of-pocket, shifting costs, inflation, you know, earlier I had used the term predictability or predictable. And I love that Mabe mentioned earlier GLP-1s as an example, where you see celebrities on television, they're losing weight. You know that obesity is a major issue amongst your covered population. It doesn't take a genius to know at some point that population is going to be looking to purchase that drug. And so it was predictable that those costs are coming through the door. The same thing applies when you're talking about changes in law, changes in regulation, changes in case law. When you're seeing new laws or existing laws that are being freshly enforced, right? Because some of these are forgotten laws that somebody found it under the covers and realized, oh, hey, I didn't know this was laying around. Blow off the dust and let's actually enforce it. Things like the No Surprises Act, right? Where you're basically telling people, hey, listen, I know medical debt is this major issue. I know that unpaid claims are putting you into bankruptcy. Good news, you're no longer allowed to be balance billed. Not what the No Surprises Act actually says, but that was the message people received. So of course, people are going to think, hey, anytime I get a balance bill, I'll just appeal it, right? Regardless of whether it's actually eligible under the NSA. Increased volume of conflicts, increased volume of appeals, increased volume of disputes means increased costs, right? So now we're dealing with all these complexities. Added on to the fact, all the other things we've been talking about, which are the new medications, the new drugs, the new treatments that are expensive, right? Specialty drugs that are expensive. You look at things like Right to Try Act, right? Where an expensive drug that's still in the trial phases, where someone like Stop Loss was thinking, we've got at least 5 years before we have to worry about a plan covering it. Now by law, it has to be covered. add that to the pile, right? So, and it's always a moving target, right? At one point, Obamacare, the ACA, that's what we had to adjust for, right? As a stop loss carrier, the fact that a plan beneficiary has a right to appeal a denial externally, and it could take years for that external appeal to finalize. And if the denial is overturned and the plan has to pay, they're looking back to their stop loss carrier from 3 years ago and they're saying, hey, remember that claim that we denied that you didn't have to reimburse? The court told us we have to pay. The law says we have to pay. Are you going to reimburse? That's not the easiest thing to predict for, right? So you have that now rekindled on top of the No Surprises Act. So there's all these additional changes and things to look at. But the one last thing I want to mention when it comes to regulatory and legal litigation, things that are maybe moving the target, moving the goalpost, is transparency. You frequently hear about these laws that require hospital transparency, right? That providers have to provide their sheets, their charge masters, their data, right? And you look at that and you think, well, shouldn't that be driving the cost down, not up? Isn't that a good thing? And one of the things that I like to talk about is not necessarily, you know, in a true open consumer market, think about purchasing produce or a new car. There are so many resources out there that you as a consumer, you're the one consuming the good. I'm driving the car. And you're also the one paying for it. I'm paying the car. So I worry about the price, but you know what else I look at? The quality. I'm looking at magazines. I'm looking at websites, trying to determine, is it the best car for the money? The problem is when law and policy, and even us as an industry, are pushing price transparency, but not quality, it could actually have the opposite of the desired effect. Because we all know the phrase, you get what you pay for. And if people don't actually know about the difference in quality when it comes to healthcare, the first thing they're going to defer to is the cost, the price. Mm-hmm. So if I, as a consumer, a member of your health plan, I'm about to go and get hip surgery at hospital number one because it's closer to my home. It's because that's where my doctor sent me, whatever the reason. But thanks to price transparency, I see that hospital number one is less expensive than hospital number two. I'm going to say, I deserve the best. I'm going to hit my deductible anyway. So I might as well go to hospital number two. So now price transparency has actually resulted in my plan paying more for my hip surgery, not less, despite the fact that had they looked in more deeply or had that quality information, they would have found out that hospital one charges less because they're paying fewer attorneys over malpractice lawsuits because the quality of their outcomes are better. Price transparency is just another example of one of those laws or regulations where we're pushing it, but it's an incomplete effort.
Yeah, quite an unintended consequence. And I guess maybe staying with that and going to Carlos and Mabe, you know, as you look at the claims that we've been seeing to date in this last year, has anything come to mind as those large claims as you look through them? Anything different about what you're seeing in this last year compared to prior years? Is it just more of them, or is it different kinds of larger claims? Is it cell and gene therapy? What are you guys seeing? Maybe Carlos, start with you on that one.
Yeah, Jeremy, I think it's more, and as we've seen, just more catastrophic. So as you've mentioned, frequency and severity are up across the board. You know, there's certainly some certain conditions like cancer. You know, we're seeing younger people out there last for longer, and there's, you know, gene therapies are helping. Now some CAR Ts are potentially second line options. So all those things are kind of bubbling up and making it a lot more expensive. And that's going to continue to see more of that in 2026 and beyond.
Yeah, I'll just add that, you know, we've been following gene therapy very closely, and the momentum in gene therapy hasn't been at the level that most people thought. But year over year, it did go up a lot. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to see more of those claims. We're also seeing some of those treatments come up, maybe get denied by the health plan, and then overturn on appeal, which then makes it possibly an eligible claim for stop loss reimbursement. So that situation is coming up more frequently, especially with Elevidys, which is the treatment for Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. That was a treatment that it got approved by the FDA, and then that manufacturer of that treatment kind of had a pullback in usage because there was a couple of deaths from individuals that used that treatment. But we're seeing it pop up more frequently because there is no other treatment for Duchenne's muscular. And so I think we're going to see more gene therapy utilization in 2026 and 2027.
What about claims that aren't gene and cell therapy related? It just, it seems that when we've looked at claims patterns over the last couple of years, like when you look at the very biggest of the biggest claims, that those seem to also be going up pretty dramatically. I know we had an example of some quadruplets, for example, mm-hmm. that ended up being very costly because the medical technology is amazing, but it's also extremely expensive. And when I compare that, I mean, neonates has always been an expensive category, but it just seems like it's on a different level currently than what it has. I don't know if you guys see it the same way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And the hospitals and the specialty drug therapies that treat those patients, they're seeing the same inflation that we've been talking about for this entire discussion, right? And so we should expect their costs are going up just like the cost of produce is going up. So as we see those claims happen, we should expect that they're going to cost more year over year.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy. Sorry, go ahead.
It's thinking about employer behavior, trying to deal with all this, Tom. So, going into 2026, what did you see from an employer's perspective and how they're trying to shop this, get a rate, whether it's a renewal or whether they need to shop, anything that you noticed that was really different this cycle compared to prior ones?
We tended to see the cycle run a little bit later or a fair amount later than we had seen historically, given that if an employer did not like what they saw for a renewal, they would, they might go out to market and then find out they have nothing better. And so they wait another month, get another month of updated information, try to shop it out again, still can't find something, or maybe get something a little closer. And I think they were kind of banking on, will carriers kind of aggressively come in at the end that might be behind on a sales goal? And so you saw a little bit of that towards the end, especially larger premium accounts. But I think you had a challenging cycle for the employers where they kept trying to find and waiting month after month, and ultimately maybe going back to their incumbent and saying, your renewal, I guess, is fine. I'll sign off on it at this point. Mm-hmm. But every time you open up that marketing again, who knows what you'll find in there from a large claim perspective. As we all know on this call, the later you get in the year, the more things develop. And they can develop fast. And so if you get to 8 to 9 to 10 or 11 months of experience, all of a sudden you have a claim that nobody wants to touch. And I heard it many, many times. If you had some bad experience or bad claims in your group, nobody wanted to touch it from a stop loss perspective. So the incumbent became the safe harbor for you to go back to.
And then on the broker side, as the brokers are dealing with this, and I think Mabe pointed to this earlier too, about, I think part of the reason for some of these studies was early messaging, to employers, get ready, this is going to be an unusual cycle. But anything you saw, Tom, from a broker behavior, broker strategy perspective, and how they were having these conversations that kind of struck you as unique for this cycle?
The ones that I spoke to on the national level had all mentioned they had kind of been, I'll say, like screaming from the mountaintops to their teams, to their local teams, like, expect a tough stop loss market. Claims are going up. You should expect larger rate increases. And they felt like the people on the street didn't really think that was going to happen. They just felt like, well, they're just kind of crying wolf. And then ultimately they found out they weren't crying wolf. It was, as they had predicted, probably worse than they had predicted. But the people on the street, most of your day-to-day consultants, had just probably felt like, well, this, the stop loss market, we can always find somebody at a lower price, at a better arrangement. We just need to shop it enough. And those opportunities or those options were not there this year for brokers to go to. Mm-hmm. So I think that the change in behavior of them trying to change behavior and prepare people And I don't think anybody likes to give bad news, right? If you're a broker or consultant advising your client that their trend is going to be higher than ever, their stop loss is going up higher than ever. I mean, those aren't easy messages to communicate. And as Maeve mentioned, like sometimes that gets you fired as the consultant or broker because you're giving them bad news they don't want to hear. And someone else says, well, I can fix that for you. Well, there is no easy fix. This market is tough. Claims are up. If you can provide solutions, that's great. But the reality is trend was back with a vengeance. And catastrophic claims were also back with a vengeance.
Anything you would add to that, Maeve, from your perspective? Like how are brokers trying to deal with this? You know, a lot of unhappy clients, no easy answers out there. They're scrambling for strategies. Anything else in addition to what Tom said that you noticed?
I would just add, we saw more willingness to engage in cost containment solutions this year. Mm. And typically, like you say, cost containment, and the broker says, don't bother me with that and don't bother my client, just pay the claim, right? And today, I think brokers and employers are a lot more willing to engage in cost containment, especially if you can tie the renewal increase to the cost containment result or ability to participate in the program. And there's so many programs, right? There's some programs that are, I would say, very intense, and there's some that are a lot easier. And you know, something like a bill review could find savings. And I think brokers are a lot more willing to engage in programs like that with the carrier. And we're going to need that. Honestly, we're going to need that because some of these costs we know are fueled by like fraud, waste, and abuse. So yeah. We have to be able to push back. We can't just be the financier of these high dollar claims.
I'm curious, Todd, you know, brokers are dealing with all this drama on the medical side. Is there some downstream impacts that you're seeing on the workforce side? I mean, employers don't just pay for medical. They have life insurance and disability and supplemental. There's other things that they're doing too. How are they trying to juggle all of that? Did you see any impact?
Well, you know, I think I would almost go back to my previous comments. You know, I think we're seeing employers now pushing costs to consumers and an increased prevalence of voluntary products. So kind of similar to the supplemental health discussion. So employers, you know, again, these cost pressures are going to impact them across the board. So they may have to lower their disability plan designs on their employer paid disability, or they may look to offer more of a voluntary, you know, buy up disability type program. Same thing with supplemental health. They're passing these costs through to consumers. They're looking for options to try to account for them. And, you know, absolutely. So we do have these conversations with brokers that, you know, employers are looking to save money based on things happening in the medical world, the stop loss world. And, you know, we adjust to that and do our best. But yeah, I think the shift to more voluntary products has been ongoing for a while, and it seems to be accelerating.
So as we think about going forward, what is this industry going to do from here? Ron, are you seeing any kind of new developments on a plan language or claims administration or anything on that front starting to develop that you hadn't seen to this degree before, or anything new on that horizon?
Yeah, sure. So it's funny, Maeve, I'm like Beetlejuice, right? If you say cost containment three times, I magically appear. And I think that's definitely where we're headed. Ultimately, you know, as an organization, the FIA group, we work on plan documents, we work with regulatory compliance, but we also facilitate and provide various cost containment programs. And the reason that we do both things are because they're very much tied together, right? A lot of the different cost containment measures that you may take are in response to new regulatory requirements. And at the same time, in order to really implement and have an effective program, your plan language needs to mirror it. And so I'll give you a quick example, right? At one point, there was, a CFO, he's on an airplane, he's reading one of the magazines, it tells you how long ago it was, because they don't have the airplane magazines on the flight anymore. But it was, you know, the Delta magazine, it was an article about medical tourism, and how you could have a patient who needs a voluntary, you know, scheduled surgery, so not an emergency procedure, but a scheduled one, send them off to Costa Rica to get the surgery, it's a beautiful environment, and it costs a fraction of the price, everybody wins. So, of course, he calls his HR department and says, hey, we got to do this right away. Let's get it done. They call a vendor. They set up a program. lo and behold, they have somebody who needs a surgery. They end up flying to Costa Rica. They get the surgery, only to find out that their plan document has an exclusion for treatment received outside the United States. So that's one of those examples where the intent is great. There are these cost containment measures that are available, but if you don't actually change the plan document, you could find yourself in a bit of a pickle. And from a stop loss perspective, you're sitting there thinking, well, they paid for this surgery, but technically it's excluded by the plan that we're insuring. It's kind of, you know, what are we supposed to do here? And so I think, again, going back to our earlier discussion about A, cost shifting onto the plan members, it's not necessary. It's not necessary. And I can tell you, I'm blessed to be in an organization where, because of cost containment measures that we've been putting into place for years, because of the language that we've implemented in our plan documents, and because of the education that we provide to our employees and their families, we're able to keep the cost relatively level. And we don't have to shift to the employee through deductibles, through copays. My copay right now is zero for most things. I don't have a deductible. How is that possible, right? It's because every year we're educating our employees that if you're going to go see a primary care physician, we're incentivizing the use of direct primary care, somebody who is not affiliated with a hospital system. Why? Because someone who's affiliated with a hospital system has been instructed, if somebody needs to go see a specialist, send them within the hospital system. If somebody needs an MRI, send them to the hospital. Someone independent could say, hey, go down the road to this independent clinic, half the price, same MRI, shoulder's not going to look any different in the film, half the cost, right? And so, again, putting these kinds of measures into the plan document, putting incentives through the use of copays, through the use of returning a portion of the savings. An example, EOBs, right? We always talk about how most employees, plan members, they get an EOB, it says right across the top of the sheet, what does it say? This is not a bill. So what's the first thing you do when it says this is not a bill? You throw it away, right? Who cares? I incentivize our employees, say, listen, if you look at the EOB and you find a mistake, an error, you've been double charged, there's something on there for a service you never received, notify us. And if we avoid payment or recover the overpayment, you get a portion of the savings. Now everybody's reading it. These are things you could do with your plan design, educating your plan members, which results in savings. I'm sure it's easy to say, well, the FIA group doesn't need a deductible. They don't need a copay. And they get a fantastic rate with the best carrier out there, Symetra, right? Because all of their employees are educated in healthcare. They're in the industry. And they're all incredibly healthy and physically fit, like this specimen before you. Obviously, their costs are low. That's not true. We have the same diverse employees. And don't forget, we're covering their families as well. Our population looks like every other employer out there. It's because we're educating our employees and their families about how healthcare works. And when you do that, when people actually understand how healthcare works, you can keep the cost low. But you have to be aggressive. You have to address the plan document. You have to stay ahead of these things.
Yeah, that I would say that, you know, you guys at FIA are probably one of the most proactive out there as far as employers with their health plan. And there's a spectrum. I remember, a couple of years ago, you know, we had you and some other employers on the stage, and we were kind of talking, and some of the other employers were on the other end of the spectrum. And, you know, they were like, well, we spend maybe 5 or 10 minutes a year on our self-funded plan and stop loss. Like, you know, the broker makes a recommendation and we make a decision and kind of move on. And I think, like Mabe was pointing out earlier, one of the differences this cycle has been more of a willingness to entertain, more proactiveness, whether it's cost containment or other kinds of measures that we're seeing. So I guess sticking with that theme, and maybe going to you, Tom, as you think about lessons that could shape this market going forward differently, you know, what comes to mind? I mean, we've all been in this industry for quite a while, and this has been a cycle unlike one we've seen ever. What do you think is a lesson to take away from it going forward?
You know, when I think about the claims that we saw this year, which obviously impact pricing and what we're putting out there, is, are there opportunities for changing potentially the site of care on some of these claims that might still allow the person to get tremendously good treatment and have a good outcome, but drop the cost by 50, 60, 70%. And you can't do that with a newborn, I mean, a premature baby in a NICU. Like, you're not going to move them somewhere else. I mean, that is what it is. But you can't, impacting those can be difficult. But the ones that, like, if you can, like Ron had mentioned, like, if you can change some of the thought process or get people incentives to move care or change site of care, it makes a tremendous difference. And as stop-loss carriers, seeing something go from 800,000 down to 200,000 all of a sudden may not become a, isn't a claim anymore, when it was a $600,000 claim potentially, or $500,000. So I think those are lessons to be learned, that there are opportunities to save on some claims. The reality is we're going to have a whole bunch of the other ones that are still going to come in and be significant, and you have to be prepared for those, and you have to be, you know, I'd say large enough as a stop-loss carrier to know you're going to take some hits no matter what. But the ability for employers and members and stop-loss carriers and brokers to partner on claims where they can shift the site of care, maybe save a lot of money, not only impacts that claim at that year, but it also maybe on an ongoing basis, it might improve a renewal because now you've changed the site of care and lowered the cost dramatically.
And how about you, Carlos? Anything you would take away as a lesson or something that you think is shaping this industry to be different going forward as a result of this?
Well, a couple of things, Jeremy. I think to me, as I look back at all the things that we went through, to me, this is a good cycle to remind ourselves of how this industry operates and runs and how it is relationship driven and how we're all in this together. You know, it takes strong communication with the employers, you know, and the brokers as you can, having a game plan to tackle the cycle. You know, all those elements are important. And I think along the years, you know, if you have a cycle that is not as strong as what we had, some of those elements sometimes can get lost. So this is a long run. This is not just a 12-month operation here. We're talking about multi-year relationships that only flourish with this communication and having a seat at the table and having an open dialogue. Without that, it really makes it more difficult to do. So to me, it's just a reminder of going back into that.
Hmm. And how about yourself, Mabe? Anything kind of sink in as a lesson or anything that strikes you as market changing going forward?
I mean, the one thing that I think is going to happen is further consolidation, right? You mentioned the NAIC 2024 study, and I think if you pull up that report, there's probably 100 stop-loss carriers when you add up all the regional health plans, all the specialty carriers, all the MGU markets. There's probably over 100 carriers that play in this space. And not everybody can get their fair share of the market in a profitable way. And so we saw some consolidation early last year. My guess is we see some more consolidation. Now, I say that, and there's still new entrants coming into this market. So, you know, sometimes new entrants come and they stick around for a little while and then they exit. I think there's going to be like a flight to quality. There's been some carriers that have been in this space for many, many years, and they'll be able to see through these cycles because it's not the first time they've gone through this, right? So I think that there's going to be some further consolidation in the market.
Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe to wrap up, looking ahead, you know, to the rest of the 2026 effective dates, the 2027 that's coming up. Is there anything that in your mind, employers or carriers or brokers or TPAs, anything that you think that they could be doing now to try to reduce some of the stress that we just went through in the cycle? I mean, it doesn't seem like inflation is magically going to go down in the next month or two, you know, so it's likely going to be similar kind of a market environment to what we saw. So, and maybe we'll start with you, Ron. Anything that employers could start doing now, in your view, to try to reduce some of that stress level that they went through?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's when it comes to self-funding, and that's primarily what we're talking about, having that data, having that transparency, being able to look at your population and say, this is how things have affected me in the past. This is what we look like now. What does common sense tell me we're going to be dealing with moving forward? And again, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this. we were featured many years ago at this point in the Boston Globe, and to this day, I'm still surprised at the reception it received, because we had looked at our population, realized that our employees were getting a little bit older, they were starting to get married, and so the expectation was that a number of them were either going to get pregnant or their spouse was going to be pregnant. And so we thought, as a self-funded health plan employer, we're going to be looking at more claims for childbirth. So preemptively, we started to look at the information that's publicly available. Look at LeapFrog, right? Look at US News, look at CMS data. It's available to you. Look at your past claims, you're self-funded. Look at your own data, right? Talk to your third-party administrator. What about other employers in the area? And we identified which hospitals provided the best quality care for the lowest cost for childbirth, right? Maternity, childbirth, neonatal. And we identified the facilities that were the best. And we told our employees, we said, listen, if you go in network, it's a network. We're not going to tell you which hospitals you have to go to. But just as an employer, and just as somebody who cares about your health and the health of your unborn baby, here's the information that's out there. And by the way, if you go to a facility that's the best quality for the lowest cost, as an employer, I'll pay for your diapers and wipes for a year. The impact that had on spending, not just then, but since then, we've been doing this now, I mentioned a decade plus, is incredible, because the variability in the cost of childbirth could be from $10,000 to $50,000, and that's a healthy delivery. So again, look at your population. We mentioned already about weight loss drugs, right? If you're looking at your population and you got the feeling, you know, this is something that there's going to be a big push, address it. If you have an aging population, you think cardiovascular health is going to be something that's going to be a big cost driver, address it now. Lastly, look at new laws, look at legislation, both that's been passed and is being considered, and ask, what do we need to do now to reduce the cost that's going to come down the pike from that law? Stay ahead of it. I tell people, at this point, you could either have it easy, right, or you could have it cheap. You can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. The time is to put in the effort is now. And we mentioned the brokers never before. And it's been mentioned ad nauseum. I'll mention again. Have I seen so much more interest and involvement in getting into the weeds and identifying these opportunities instead of just saying, just give them the biggest, best network and let's move on, right? Look at the spreadsheet. Pick the lowest one. Is it the network they like? Yeah, move on. No more. And I think now is a great opportunity for that. I think finally people are feeling the burn, to the point that they're willing to put in the effort.
What about employers that are, you know, they are interested in that, they like the sound of that, Ron, but they're like, oh, you know, we make sprockets and what you're talking is a different language. Like, I don't even know where to start. You know, what's LeapFrog? How would I go? Like, what would you say? How can an employer in that kind of a position where it's almost overwhelming to go down a path like you're painting, how can they get started?
Sure. So, I mean, the self-serving answer is call us, call the peer group, right? But it's funny because I think also just in general, and I don't want to be, you know, self-promoting, but I mean, a lot of this information is out there, maybe more so than in the past. And a lot of it is broken down. I've seen videos on Instagram and YouTube where it's a comedian who's explaining how healthcare works. There's a great video. What is it? Adam Ruins Everything. It's a comedian. I think Vox was the channel, VLX. And it's on YouTube. It's got a bunch of hits. And he explains out of network and in network and how house hospital pricing works. And it's something that anybody can watch on YouTube. And it makes it very easy to understand. What I think is fascinating is you hear smart people, you know, barons of industry going up on stage and talking about how healthcare is too complicated. And they could defeat, you know, the financial markets and they could conquer other nations and, you know, master 401ks, but when it comes to healthcare, they surrender. It's too complicated. And what's fascinating is insurance isn't all that complicated, right? When you think about insurance that we all purchase ourselves instead of going through all these other parties, look at auto insurance, right? You have a small fender bender, you know, you get out of the car, you look at the other driver and you're like, listen, I don't want to tell the insurance. They're going to bump up my rates. I got a guy who could do it for half the price. Can I just cut you a check? Make a referral and we're all good. He says, yeah, sure, no problem, right? Why is it people are so anxious about submitting a claim to their auto insurance because Lord knows they don't want their rates to increase. But in health insurance, it's quite literally, hey, you know, I'm at the hospital getting a flu shot. I've got a headache. And I say, hey, you got a couple aspirin for me before I go? Sure, that's what insurance is for. Ha, ha, ha. Meanwhile, they're going to charge my insurance $50 a pill, right? That's going to come back to bite me at some point. Why is that mentality, that philosophy so different? These are things that everybody could understand if you just give them that information. Tell them, at a hospital, a Tylenol will cost $50. If you could wait till you get home, please do. Thank you for telling me that, right? People don't even have that information. Those are things, easy places to start that will have a meaningful impact.
Well, we are coming off the season of New Year resolutions. And so, you know, the goal to become more proactive is a pretty popular choice right now. So maybe employers will start taking you up on that. How about you, Tom? Anything that, from your perspective, employers or brokers can start doing to prepare for the next cycle, reduce those stress levels?
I think, as I mentioned earlier, kind of looking into the situations or the ongoing claims that they have where maybe they can have some impact. And again, you're not trying to change the person's outcome of their care, just maybe where they're getting it to maybe save some money there, especially a lot of money. And also, I think, you know, we've had such a soft market for the last 5 years that employers that hadn't changed their stop loss deductibles in 5, 6, 7 years. Let's talk about that. Like, what's the right level for you to be at? If you haven't moved it in 5 years, leverage trend is real. And that's one sure way to defeat a price increase is to move that deductible up. And I think stop loss care is a general rule. We tend to give a pretty big discount to move a deductible up, more so than maybe the number of claims you might see. So most employers will win in that calculation. So to me, it's looking at your claims. As Ron mentioned, I try to identify things that you can impact. And also, how about just something simple like try to save money on your stop loss by moving your deductible up? We do it all the time with auto insurance, right? Move my deductible to $500 just to get that down. Why wouldn't we consider it on stop loss?
And how about yourself, Carlos? Any advice you would give or anything you would point to that employers or brokers could do?
Yeah, it's basically the same comment, Jeremy. It's the what we can do to deal with cost containment, and I would agree with Tom on the optimization of the deductible. That is one thing that we did see this cycle, some employers going up, and I think that they need to look more at that a little bit more closely because it's going to take an impact, and they need to take the time to figure out what that means for them. You know, because it's not easy. You know, there's a lot more risk they're absorbing, and sometimes they're not ready. So how do you build up to that? Work with their TPAs, work with their brokers to help them figure out what that means, and ultimately, of course, with their stop loss carriers. So from my seat, I think those are the elements that they should be focusing on.
Great. And Mabe, how about the last word from you? What's your take?
I got no last word. I think Ron and Tom and Carlos did a fantastic job of summarizing, and I got nothing else to add.
Well, you guys have all really helped make this a fantastic discussion. So thank you all much for joining and for having the talk. Thank you, Todd, for letting me guest host this podcast, first one in stop loss. Maybe we'll do some more. This is a lot of fun. And appreciate it. So thank you all and have a great rest of your day.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you all.
You're listening thank to you. Working Forward, Future of Work podcast series. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Symetra Life Insurance Company or its affiliates.